Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you'll meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Thank you for taking the time to sit down and chat with me, Hans. Welcome to Label Sessions and thrilled to have you on the podcast. So just to start us off, just please do introduce yourself to our audience and what you're best known for.
Oh, well, I'm Hans Bathija, originally a Londoner, now sitting over here in Toronto and Toronto, Ontario, Canada. What am I known for? I suppose a number of things, but just a madman getting things done, I guess, is what I'm known for. So, and entertaining people with all the various things that I do, whether they're serious or silly. For me, it's all the same things. Same thing. It's inspiring people to get out of their comfort zone at the end of the day.
Brilliant. Well, short but sweet. So we sort of know you as a delivery expert, someone you turn to when you want things not just done, but executed with precision and flair. What is it that makes you so good at this? What do you think that others are just not considering?
Well, I think it always starts with a foundational aspect. And a foundational aspect is not something you're just born with, but it's something you've got to find, right? So you've got to create that foundation, first of all. You got to start from a position of strength. You don't have that, you can't do anything. Your back will break. Your family will break. Everything starts to break. So you've got to have that strength. So for me to do my job and what I do for a living, you know, effectively, I have to build that foundation, not just for myself and not just for my team, but my family and society as well, because it all extends out from there, right? So I think one is foundation. That then leads to integrity. Without integrity, like a bridge, there's no integrity, the bridge falls down. You can build all the foundation you want, but if you don't maintain it, right, that's the integrity, it has to be maintained. That has to be there as well. Right. So that's how I do things. You know, you build the foundation, search it out, build it, build the integrity. And then lastly, you know, I was asked the same question recently, you know, about values and things like that. And I said, well, one of the values I like to have when I do all the my kind of things is a sense of humor. And that's something I think you develop a bit later on as you get a bit older. It's hard to do that when you're younger, to have that sense of humor, I think, because, you know, you're still struggling with yourself, where you fit in, who you are as a person, who you are as a professional, who you are as a son, daughter, wife, all those things, right? But I think once those things settle down a little bit, you can now have a sense of humor about the challenges that you're facing because you've done all those other things. And now you can look back and say, yeah, I've been there. I've seen it. I get it. This too shall pass is the old British saying, right?
Also known as I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt.
That's right. I mean, got the t-shirt, fell down drunk, all that type of stuff.
From that, well, how do you balance innovative thinking with practicalities and just getting things done?
Well, that's a difficult question. You know, what's the old word for that kind of thing? You know, that kind of question is, you know, how do you balance innovative thinking and getting things done? It's a very difficult thing because you really have to analyze, you know, why you're doing the innovative thinking, right? What's the purpose of it? You know, where am I doing it? Like, who am I doing it with? Like, you're not doing it in isolation, obviously. I mean, yes, you could innovate yourself. That's a spiritual journey. I think everybody should innovate themselves. It starts with your own personal innovation, which is not always an easy journey. But then there's also, you know, corporate innovation. So you're doing corporate innovation. And there's, like, you know, things like pro bono innovation, like not-for-profits, things like that. So you got to know which area of innovation you're doing. If you're doing it with your clients, if we're talking pure client basis, again, you have to know your industry. You have to know the strength of that industry. Is it open for innovation? What's the zeitgeist, as the Germans would say, right? Are you seizing the day, carpe diem? Sometimes there is that zeitgeist to push and you have a brief window to do it. So you better go all guns a-blazing, get that done, because you know that window is going to drop at some point. It's going to shut. And all of a sudden, people don't want to do it anymore. And then you wait, all of a sudden, do it again. So it's a boom and bust innovation cycle. You have to be aware that your clients, although they're paying for innovation, may not even know what innovation is, right? I mean, people get to positions of power for various different reasons. Sometimes it's truly because they're very smart and they're very ambitious and they deserve to be there. And sometimes someone got fired and who's next? Oh, Josh, what are you doing tomorrow? Nothing. How would you like to be vice president? How much do I get paid for that? X. Sounds good. And you're in. Human nature, organizational nature. And so you as a consultant in innovation or delivery, as you said before, people know me as a delivery expert. You have to be aware of these circumstances, right? Then you have to work with different people and you have to be cognizant. Hey, they are your client. They are paying you to do X. Fine. Your job is to A, give them what they're asking for. B, warn them that what they're asking for will lead to the following. And C, just carry on delivering whatever it is after that. When you're younger, you get a little more feisty. You want to be more idealistic about your innovation and what your success criteria is, right? But not everybody wants to hear that. They've got their own pressures they have to deal with. And as you get older, you start to realize, you know, they are under different types of pressures than you may be under as a consultant.
No, I think that's really interesting about how it sort of follows boom and bust fashion, like akin to fashion, where fashion sort of comes around in a circle that goes.
Correct. And then you also have to know, like, you know, if you're dealing with laws, you know, different laws and different ecosystems. If you're sitting here in Canada working with a Canadian company that's under a regulatory regime, it's a different mindset than dealing with an American company. You're also dealing with jurisdictional matters. Like if you're dealing with a company that's operating in Quebec, you've got language issues, right? Cultural issues that will come out of Quebec that will influence what you're doing. If you're dealing in a North American market space, again, you're dealing with that. If you're dealing with Europe and its privacy laws, again, very, very different, right? If you're looking at a global corporation, you have to bring that kit to the table to explain to your clients, hey, have you thought about this? You know, I had one client that was doing a merger and acquisition. I won't say who because it's a bit embarrassing, but they were doing a merger, bringing something in-house that they had bought, but never actually operationalized the integration. But they actually owned the entity, left it alone, and then realized, oh, as a defensive measure, we should bring that piece of the bank inside, right? So they don't get exposed to hedge funds type stuff. At least they own the risk themselves. And then we were doing some data transfer type stuff, and they suddenly realized they never got permission from the European Union to transfer labor resources and so forth into Canada. But people are human at the day. Even organizations are comprised of human beings. They're not comprised of AI automatons, at least not yet, right? But they are still human and still going to think, oh, we're going to do all this. We're going to go all the way along and hire all these people. We're going to put a lot of multi-millions of dollars into our budget. And then one little piece you forgot about, which is to get the authority to do this, right? And then European Union says, no, you're not going to move the data. You're not going to move the people. You're going to base everything over here, full stop, that's it. Then the whole program has to be shut down or reworked and or scaled down, right? So you have to, you know, think about all these things depending on which sector you're doing innovation in.
And you've sort of read my mind a little bit there, because that was actually the question I was going to ask you next, because you obviously work a lot in the financial industry, one that is quite regulated, like we're discussing that. Is there any other sort of things that you'd mention when it comes to trying to make change in the space, and what advice that you'd impart for someone trying to make change happen in regulated industries? Obviously, you know, other than making sure that the European Union's on board.
Well, again, if you're in the regulatory industry, not every aspect of what you're doing is generally regulated, right? You're working in a bank. They're going to tell you what innovation they want, first of all. You start with, they're going to tell you. You're not going to tell them. They've got a whole phalanx of people up top. And, you know, I'm a small fry. If you're dealing with the big banks, they're going to do a big fry first of all. So you're going to get a McKinsey or Boston Consulting Group or something who's going to give them a roadmap. This is the roadmap to the promised land. Whether it's deliverable or not, it's a different story, right? Right, but they will give you the roadmap, right? Me as a you know, consultant in this world for, you know, 20, 30 years, my job is to help them execute that roadmap and maybe then poke holes in the roadmap, saying, you know, that's what they told you. Is that truly deliverable? Maybe not. Maybe we need to change it a little bit and go from there. So what innovation is achievable is the goal, right? You only have so much time and they've got quarterly results, right? So you're dealing with financials. Institutions is different than dealing with other industries. But if you're dealing with quarterly results, especially in a bank, you've got to deliver within those quarters, right? And by the end of the fiscal year, you better have something you could put on the table that the executive can say to their boss, right? Up to the CEO level, saying on these big enterprise projects, this is what we delivered in this fiscal year. This is what's being queued up for the next fiscal year. And you get another tranche of budget. So you've got to play with the budget game as well in the industry. So it's not being idealistic, right? You've got to be practical with your innovation. Well, what can you achieve given all the bureaucracy that's involved, right? Banks, especially banks, are like mini governments at the end of the day, if not bigger than governments.
You mentioned to our team when you're off on that you are part of the honorable company of the Freeman of the City of London of North America. That's incredible. And I'd love to know personally a little bit more about the organization and your role within it.
So I'm what they officially call the immediate past master. Now the emphasis is on master, right? That's key, because without that you lose the fun and the zeitgeist of the what they call the delivery movement, which the zeitgeist of delivery movement goes back hundreds of years. Our zeitgeist is back to the Magna Carta in medieval times. In fact, Londinium, right? So our zeitgeist is quite a long zeitgeist, and hopefully that zeitgeist keeps going. So I represent, basically the delivery movement over here in North America as the immediate past master. The current master is Jeffrey Lewis, East London Essex bloke. I'm originally from Hampstead, born in Hampstead in North London. Came across the pond in 75. Always been proud of my British roots. And then somebody drags me into this whole Freeman thing and says, hey, in fact, he's an Irish friend of mine who was a Met cop. Could you imagine an Irish Met cop in the 60s and 70s? It's got a bit of a tough bloke to be an Irish copper in London in the 60s, 70s. But he says to me, you're a tried and bona fide, true, born Londoner. Not necessarily bred somewhat to some degree, but the rest of it was Canadian. But, his and Her Majesty has always been part of the existence of my household. He says, hey, how would you like to be involved with the Freeman? I said, what's that? He goes, let's just join and find out. So I joined. And then I grew up with Dick Whittington and his cat. So Dick Whittington was thrice Lord Mayor of the City of London, of the Square Mile. And he had a famous cat, although it's a bit of a myth. It was just a story, right? So I used to read Lady Bird books. So I knew all about the city, Dick Whittington and his cat. So as a somewhat amateur historian and who loves the mystery of the City of London, this was great. So one thing led to another. Became the clerk. I was in charge of membership at one point, events, and then installed as the master of the honorable company. And then I became a liveryman of the Worshipful Company of International Bankers, which allows me to nominate people to be admitted to the Freeman of the City of London. I'm a freeman of the Company of Information Technologists and a freeman of the Worshipful Company of Stationers and Newspaper Makers, which is where the word copyright comes from. Because you needed to get the approval of the stationer's company to sell books on the lawn of St. Paul's Cathedral. So I think it was the Queen Anne's Copyright Act came along, and then the government started to regulate copyright. But prior to that, it was the guilds of the City of London governing a lot of rules and regulations from various industries. So then they become livery companies. The livery companies is about 110, I think, now official livery companies. And there are other institutions of the city, which are not necessarily livery companies, but are companies and or guilds.
Sort of from that, what is it that you look for when you want to create the best, most effective team? Or if you didn't know someone to reach out to, if you didn't have that sort of resource, for example?
You'd be surprised if you reach out to network, someone's going to know somebody somewhere. So you start with that. So if I don't know somebody, you're asking me, hey, do you guys know anybody? Because word of mouth is still the best thing ever. And I say this to people, like, because I straddle certain generations. I was sort of raised by the Second World War codgers, right? The old codgers, right? I spent a lot of time in the military. I do a lot of work in the Canadian military world, some degree with the Brits. But through my military connections, I had a lot of guys from the Second World War yell at me, scream at me in good ways, right? Really make you a little tough. Because if you can handle their fire, they'll buy you a drink. Right? That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So as long as I can handle the fire, and then you do that first, they buy you a drink afterwards. And then after that, you now have the right to now to argue backwards. But first you have to take it. Okay? You can't argue from day one. That's how the old generation was. The generation after that, the boomers don't quite work the same way. They're not in the same kind of mindset as the Second World War generation. But I'm in sort of the generation that's between Gen X and the boomers, And I'm a Brit too, so I have a more British, old-fashioned view. And so it depends on which one you're talking to. But when I was golfing last year, and I was talking, I had this discussion with some guys on the golf course. I'm with Princess Trust Canada. I'm a mentor with Operation Entrepreneur, and I help mentor veterans who are transitioning from military to civilian life and may have a good business idea. I just like this. They want to bounce some ideas off me and, you know, frame what they want to do. And so I was talking to some guys who had a sales company, and I was asking the difference in generations. I said, what's the difference between, say, and he was about my age, our generation, and the younger generation, say millennials mostly, and then maybe touching upon Gen Z. But what's the difference in terms of business approach and etiquettes and so forth? He says, well, the difference is he sees the older generation, so say the boomer generation, are very comfortable with the phone. You tell them, here's a list. Here's 100 people on a list. Call them. Right? And you get we give you commission. They get that right off the bat. Boom. They're calling. Right? If you tell them to post it on social media that they're calling 100 people, they don't know how to do that. They don't know how to turn that energy into this energy. Right? So they can't do that. So, and they don't really realize or want to realize how important that is in today's interconnected world, right? Using social media and so forth. The younger generation, if you gave them 100 people and said, call them, they go for coffee, right? They'll run away.
Yeah, be mortified of picking up the phone.
And my guy's like, well, it is proven if you're trying to make a living that calling people is way more successful than texting people.
Don't give them an opportunity to ignore it by that chance.
Correct. Emailing or texting or, well, not even emailing, but Instagramming or whatever will not translate into the same numbers that pick up the phone and calling will do. So the boomers who are still salespeople, who are operational salespeople, still are making the money. They're still far more useful than the millennial who doesn't know how to pick up the phone, right? Because you got to pay the rent. It's expensive. These guys will still be able to make this. Even if 70 years old, they can still call, right? You try to explain that to the millennials that you need to call. It still won't work, right? Now, obviously, the millennial who does both, because he told me that, the millennials who do both, now they're your rock stars. They can call and promote the fact that they called, whatever, right? Those are your rock stars. That's success, is that individual. So assembling a team, right? You talk about assembling a team. You want to find those people who can do that, have the personality skills to have a conversation like coffee or a bourbon or whatever it is, whether it's remotely or whatever, it doesn't matter, right? So you want somebody who has the conversation, but also the ability to use modern tools to promote the conversation, right? Because you're in a very busy world and everyone's competing for dollars, right? Or pounds or pence or farthings. So whatever you want to do. So you need that person who could do that. So finding people who can work like that and work on the fly, right, is the way I look at things. That because there's so much different factors, you want different approaches. You want people to remind you that you're missing something. You should look at it. Somebody who's not afraid of you, right, who could handle the fire and go, wait a minute, you forgot about this. Oh, yeah, you're right. I did forget about that, right? Somebody who watches your back while you go wage the wars.
Speaking of getting things done, that's our main sort of question set done, but we've got a lovely little quickfire round for you.
Go ahead, let's do it.
Who is someone that you look up to?
Who is someone I look up to? Well, I guess first of all, I have to look up to my wife. Why? Because she has to put up with me. I'm doing all these crazy things, monster animal company. She's from Croatia. She has no idea what that's all about. You know, she dreads me going out the door. And then I come back with a new idea. You know, and on a serious note, she is certainly, you know, helping me out when I do my things. And she's raising the children. And that's the most important thing is she's there as a rock, as a foundation with integrity, right? With a strong value system in this crazy world. You know, I mean, she's here doing that with me.
That brings us to our last question. It's all about our trademark. On a scale of 1 to 10, Hans, how weird are you?
I would say I'm one on the scale of least weird, but I can see from a lot of people's I'd be 10 on the definitely weirdo scale, because I think the middle ground of 5 is probably the weirdo who is actually viscerally the most weird. You know, if say the punk rock was of the 70s, would be the 5. And I'd probably be at the 10 on the most weird because I'm actually doing what one should be.
I love it. I love it. Well, yeah, thank you so much for your time, man.
Fantastic.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.